Blog Talk Radio.
Life, love, and wellness.
Show, and you know Tuesdays is like my favorite day of the week. I get so excited, and we have three tremendous speakers with us tonight. I can hardly wait to bring them on, and thank you, audience, for being with us, for being a part of this event tonight. I really appreciate you for supporting us, and there's a couple of things that we do to kind of get ourselves in alignment on this ride that we take every Tuesday night. And the first thing that we do always is give thanks to the ancestors. We give thanks for them being with us today and always, but particularly on Tuesday nights as we talk about subjects that are not seldom spoken about in an open forum or, you know, out loud in public. And so we're very, very thankful for the ancestors' energy and spirit as they guide direct us here on Tuesday night. So we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors for strength, and we trust that they got our backs. We know they got our backs. And so, ancestors, we love you sincerely. Ashe, ashe, ashe. So tonight is all about life, it's all about love, and it's all about wellness. We're talking about ex-cons. We have a panel of ex-cons and Edward Palmar, and we have Glenn Williams, and then we have Reverend Charlie Wilson, who is the mother of a ex-con or formerly incarcerated, you know, whatever suits you as far as the description goes of the person. But these individuals have come and they've agreed to be on the show one additional time. You know, they each had their own segment on, and I'm going to bring you kind of up to date as what we talked about for each one of their individual segments, and then we're just going to let it roll from here because we're going to let the spirit guide this conversation because I'm not sure where it's supposed to go, and I don't particularly like those shows that are pre-orchestrated and, you know what everybody's going to say like that. So we let the spirit move through us. So, audience, you know the drill, and in case you don't, and I'm going to do my best to say this more than one time, you're invited to be a part of the discussion. But let's hear from the speakers first. And our call-in number, if you're not on with us, is 516-531-9819. And you would just simply hit the one on your dial, and that alerts me to let me know that you want to talk live on air. We do ask that you keep your language civil, no vulgar, profane, or rude language in any kind of way. Please respect the speakers at all times. And then once I open your mic, be careful, or open up your line, be careful of any background noise, because the mics are extremely sensitive and they pick up all kind of noise, like paper shuffling or anything. So we just want to make sure that all our playbacks are in the highest quality of listening as available. So again, you're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show, and we have with us tonight Edward Palmore, Reverend Charlie Wilson, and Glenn Williams. And again, I'm going to give you just a brief synopsis of what they each talked about in their individual shows, and then we're going to bring them online. So we're going to take a quick music break. I know we're going to get this one in. We may just get this one in, but we're going to start it up, and then we'll be right back. Thank you for being here with us.
Darkness no longer, a child is born. Mothers shed tears of joy as baby catches his lungs. My daddy's not there where he ought to be, somewhere in Georgia, skinning and shooting craps on his knee. Another victim born out here in the hood, and based on statistics, it really ain't all good. Welfare takes the tail, and daddy can't find, and it can't be seen. The family becomes a crime. The hunt is on, and brother, you're the prey. Serving time in jail, it just ain't the way. I'm living so hard, babe, that my hair's gray. We got to make a change. It's a brand new day. And it's on the way. We just marched a million plus the other day. Look, look, we all witnessed the swift rolling down Miss Liberty's hand. She knows the sleeping giant is no longer sleeping dead. Oh, what a fulfillment of prophecy. Let us teach the children freedom's never been free. It's okay to cry. Go ahead and cry, cause Jesus wept, but hope and faith be kept. It's a new day. No need to fear, cause people, the answer to your prayers are here. Sister Mary, don't you weep. Tell mother not to moan. We need the love, and daddy's coming home. There's no need to worry. The times dictate a plan. Mother Earth's given birth to a brand new man. Sister, I know you're misunderstood, but hold on to your man, cause the future looks good. It's a new day.
A new world order, a brand new day.
It's a new
a change of mind for the human race. A new world order, a brand new day.
It's
a change
new day.
Of mind for the human race.
Beware of the lies and false prophecy. We are many with the eyes, but don't all really see. You must be merciful, my friend, to obtain the same. So if you break the chains, don't pass the blame. We should say unto all, and I'll say it again, it's not just to win. Shake a hand, make a friend. We who are pure at heart somehow might see there's still light in the world. Come rejoice with me. It's a new day.
A new world order. A brand new day.
It's a
change
day.
Of mind.
I was Mr. Curtis Mayfield, New World Order. And that's what we're talking about tonight with our three guests. So welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And again, you're welcome to join in the discussion once we first talk with our speakers. And so I want to bring you up to date or just give you a short, brief summary of when these particular guests were on the show before. So Edward Palmore was on the show, and his show was titled From a Prisoner's Point of View. And so he talked about the hopelessness in three areas: justice reform, prison reform, and policy on reentry. And that there were some areas that needed to be addressed in the prison system. Education was one. We needed to talk about expungement and need to serve as mentors, that drugs was a problem, and the fear that's generated is just more helplessness. That's what it does to the inmates. And then next we had Reverend Charlie Holiday Wilson. And she actually brought a call to action for us, and she talked about returning citizens and having a prison ministry, self-empowerment classes, and that the family needs to be in alignment or in support of the returning citizens. She called it family reunification, that we need to get to the root of what happened, and that the families must learn how to help. Families must learn how to help. And we need to have more patience, and the family together need to find the root of the problem that actually triggered the behavior, because she says we're all responsible for the our loved ones being locked up. And then finally, we had Mr. Glenn Williams. And he actually educated himself while he was locked up. And his lessons are really a lot to impress upon us, that just because someone is locked up for an extended length of time does not mean that their lives are over. So Glenn helped just a ton of people get released. And since he's have received his release, he's done training with workforce skills. He's done different types of other training, and I believe he's even now currently doing some training in the jail system. So he was selling drugs at age 13. He said by the time he was 15, the whole block was working for him. So he talks about the unfairness, or how the crack was unfairly judged on people of color versus actually the more potent or the pure drug, and that these individuals have skills, you know, drug dealer have customer service skills and strategic planning and marketing skills, and the heroin user, you know, risk taker and brave and sales. And so, you know, we just need to find a new way to look at people and to bring them in and have conversations with folks, you know, and stop acting like because they were caught that there's something inherently wrong or unfitting of them for us to treat them with any type of honor and respect. So that is a short summary of our three guests for tonight, and I have just opened up their lines. And so I want to change the order slightly, because Glenn just texted me, and he had some car issues. So I want to bring Glenn on first, and then I'll bring the other two. I think I just lost one of our guests. So, Glenn, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your show. Hello, everyone.
Yeah,
how's everyone doing?
I appreciate you. And Edward's on the phone with us, too. Edward, you there?
Yes, I am. You hear me?
Yes, yes. Say hi to Glenn. That's your new friend.
Hi, Glenn. How you doing?
All right. How are you, Edward? How are you? Doing great.
Fine. We got to meet one day.
Yes, definitely,
indeed.
Man.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard a lot about you, man.
About this, so here she is. Hold on. I'm going to bring Reverend Charlie back on for some. Reverend Charlie, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yeah, you dropped off.
Hello,
for a
Reverend
minute,
Charlie.
So. Hey, how y'all doing?
Fine. How you
right,
doing?
I'm great, great. Good to be on the line with you guys.
Yes,
yeah,
here.
We got both Edward and Glenn on with us. So I gave a summary of if somebody's got a TV or something in the background. Okay. So I gave a summary about what each one of you brought to the table in the beginning, and we had several of the listeners wanted to bring you guys back to see, you know, like what could be formed or where can we go in as far as creating this new world order that Curtis Mayfield talked about, you know, where we have a change of mind and welcoming our newly released or returning citizens back into our homes and into our lives. Because you guys made some excellent points in as far as, you know, the lessons that were learned and, you know, what you had to deal with when you got back. So how can we as a nation of people, how can we better serve individuals coming back home?
Okay.
In whatever order you want to do it.
Okay, you mean how can the community
realizes that we're on the brink of a recession, and our communities have not fully recovered from the last recession, and we have to think of what's happening within our society. I've listened to the news reports that the candidates on the Democratic side talk about decarceration. I think AOC talks about decarceration quite frequently, about taking people out, but we're coming into a period of time when our disposable income is minimal. We're at a period of time in our lives where our people lack hope. These guys who are coming out of prison, these are guys who aren't coming out of prison and going into a home. These are guys who are coming out of prison, and they have to find their way. Some of them may have children. Some of them have been incarcerated since they were teenagers. And they really have not brought into the American dream, because the American dream to them have been the American nightmare. And you talk about the whole idea of having a home, the sanctity of having a home, knowing that you can come into your house and you don't have to, and you can go in and fix your food, you can take care of your laundry, you can do those sorts of things. Those days in Black America, we're at a point where that's not where folks aren't able to do that anymore. The life is becoming more and more tenuous. And I kind of feel that as they start releasing people from prison, and as this economic crisis become more and more entrenched, that we're going to see more and more folks really going out of prison, because there's nothing for them to do. I go through the city streets and our young kids, and our young people, when I say young, I mean from 19 up to 36, have absolutely nothing to do from day in to day out. And that's a problem that, to me, needs to be addressed. And I think a lot of it, its roots, I'm doing a lot of reading now, and a lot of it is rooted in slavery. And I think Michelle Alexander did a good job in her book about the new Jim Crow, and I think that we still have some problems of racism vis-a-vis a white male privilege in this country that has to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed in terms of income inequality and some of the other issues that we're facing.
Glenn or Charlie, either one of you want to add on to that?
Yeah, I would say this is Glenn. I would say I agree with him 100%. And you know, like I've experienced with a lot of people that were incarcerated and they do come home with nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these guys even have skills, but they can't find employment or anything like that. So it leaves them out there with nothing to do. And then when they do finally get even a small portion of responsibilities as far as bills or children or the baby mothers demanding money from them, and they can't find employment, they don't have anything else to do but just hang out and hang around, their mind starts wandering, and then they go back to kind of like doing what they know best on how to get money and how to be a so-called, how to be a man, so to speak, because the way society has it today, especially for someone that's coming home from prison, if you're not really doing anything, then you can't show any support for your children, or you can't even do your own, have a roof over your head, or have a car, or have anything that's worth anything. They say, according to society, that you can't even be a man. So what a lot of people try and do, from what I've seen, is they can't find a job, they can't do anything else, they resort back to doing what they know best, and now they have that sense of feeling of, okay, I'm handling my business now. Now I can take care of this. Now I'm a man, or now I'm this, or now I'm that. But I don't think when people do come home, they're getting a fair shot to really do the positive things that reentry actually calls for. And it's not really at the fault of a lot of them, because some people, they're only going to do what they were taught. And some people just had never been taught to make it successfully in a positive manner by any means. Some people, it depends on their coping skills, but some people just be like, they're like, okay, I've tried this, I've tried that. They told me, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. I've been home 7 months and I didn't do any of that. But now I'm not getting anything coming my way. I can't get a job. People are like shunning me when I go, and when they find out I'm the next felon and this and that. But I'm just a person who got caught doing the same thing that almost 80% of the 160 million work population has done, and they just didn't get caught. But why am I being treated like this just because I got caught doing my illegal conduct? So they're feeling that they have we're feeling that we have a fair and unfair like disadvantage. But me, I know crime is not an option for me, so I know I'm gonna make it work whatever way I can. But a lot of people don't think or see it that way. A lot of people were not trained to be able to cope with it that way. So some people are just going to go by what they know how to do, and that's just reentering the world of crime. You know, like he just said, they fall into the things that are out there. And then with the recession being the way it is today, that makes it even worse. You know, so it's kind of like a catch 22 for a lot of people, a lot of ex-felons when they do come home. And reentry, the word reentry sounds good, but a lot of people not getting the fruits of what reentry should be.
Right. And I hear Edward and Glenn, I hear what you're saying. And I kind of liken it to the unfairness of the laws of the drugs. You know how we talked about that. You know, and pure crack has one, and then the crack cocaine, you know, pure cocaine has one set of rules, and then crack cocaine has another set of rules because of the population. So it's an imbalance in the way that things go. And Edward, you talked about the white male privilege, I believe, and so that then puts me in a mindset that we need to create our own, you know, whatever that is. Like Glenn has a couple of training courses that he teaches the returning citizens, and where they learn new skills. But then again, if they don't obtain employment, I could understand what you guys are saying about going back into crime. Reverend Charlie, what you say?
Well, thank you. I would agree with most of what they said. I was sitting here thinking as they were talking, and I was thinking about what he mentioned rehabilitation, and that's where the system is failing. They are not doing rehabilitation. It's more of a warehousing that's taking place. Working in the facility, volunteering in the facility as I've done and currently do, I hear much of the same thing that has been said. I'm bored. There's nothing to do in here. They sit there all day, every day, with nothing to do. They implement a few classes supposedly to help them to become ready to re-enter society. However, the system is so lackadaisical and non-conformative that if I don't feel like doing it, then I won't do it. And I'll just sign off saying that I've done it. So they're not giving any incentive to the residents that are being housed to do better. And, of course, when you're in that environment, you're coming from a place where you're treated as if you're nobody. When you come out on the street, you're ill-prepared to even begin to start in a lot of cases. We have to look at the educational aspect of it. A lot of our people, our brothers and sisters, are not educated. A lot of them don't have means to education, even though there are programs set up for them, too, that I'm learning about. And even though these programs are set up for them to take advantage of, a lot of the systems don't provide it. They don't have the information, nor do they have the equipment. A lot of what they do in the form of rehabilitation is forming them out to do free labor for county governments and different branches, different city functions. You know, we get the free labor so we can pocket the money that's being paid to provide them with the means that they need in order to come out and function better. So I agree, if they're not educated, if they don't have homes, a big problem is homes. We're staying with relatives, and after 30 days, we're about ready for them to leave. So if they don't have a place that they can go on their own, if they don't have a job, they're looking at my only source or my only resource is to do what I do best. That's get my game on and hustle. If it means taking something from somebody, then that's what I'll do because it's self-preservation. I do agree that a lot of it is based on slavery mentality, and it's not so much a slavery mentality from those that are being housed or warehoused in the system, but it's the slavery mentality of those that have been given charge of them. So I think we have to look at the education. I think we have to properly train them to be able to get a job when they come out. And I think we have to work on the outside to educate those that are here, those who have jobs, those who have houses available, those who are able to help. We have to educate them so that they'll be able or willing to accept a returning citizen, because the ignorance is deep out here. It's deep. So we got to tear this whole thing down and start it from the beginning. And that's not going to be an easy task.
Are you saying that's for the community to do?
The community has to take part. I'm online daily, constantly talking to people about receiving people, returning citizens, giving a helping hand, and the comments that were made, you know, they're criminals. They deserve to be in jail. You can't trust them in the crime in the neighborhood, and I want more police, and I want them locked up. And I'm trying to educate them what's the reason they're doing it. Because, again, you mentioned, I said earlier, we have to figure out why are we doing these things. Is it lack of education? Is it lack of unemployment? Is it because we have mental issues? Is it because we have health issues? What's the root and why are we doing these things? Yeah, we've always been the underdog, and heaven forbid, we'll always be the underdog. We'll never be treated the way we should be treated. But what keeps us in this grind and this vortex that continually sucks us down? And I'm trying to convince them that if the community doesn't step up and take an active part in rebuilding our community.
Yes,
because
ma'am.
That is one of our biggest problems. We think we have overcome, and we forgot where we came from. So
yes,
until
ma'am.
We start looking back at where we are, learn our history, learn our roots, and take back, get back to what we know, because we're survivors. And we can survive, but it's going to take all of us, and it's going to take education to do it. It's going to take all of us to come together and stop signaling out and becoming one
right.
separate person, saying, well, it's just about me, but it's about all of us.
Excellent points that you just made. And that was the reason why I had, repeated some of the statements that Glenn and Edward had made, because that's what I'm feeling right now in my spirit, is that the community, we need to step up, because we already know that it's not going to be done for us. If that was the case, we would not have the injustice and the unfairness in the penal system, because the laws were written with the intention of free labor, as you mentioned, and after slavery was over, so that the laws are skewed against the black man, because they didn't have a job, and there was nothing given. I was just like, okay, here's your freedom. Go on out there. Go on, make your way. And so laws came up which were as stupid as, if a black man was standing on the corner for 30 minutes to, doing nothing, that he could be jailed, and it was a crime. And then they would charge him. He didn't have any money. So, then he had to go work on the labor farms and stuff. So, one, like you said, once we understand the whole history of it, perhaps then we can come together as a community and provide the resources and the help, the places where the dwellings where folks can come in and stay, where they can get additional training, go into business for themselves, utilizing their skills, because you're absolutely correct. We are survivors.
Ms. Rogers.
Yes.
There's a couple of things I was thinking about. As time goes on within this state, this legislature might change in the next 2 years. There's two issues that came to mind, and they have to be dealt with in the state legislature. One is the issue of expungement, and I think in New Jersey, Governor Murphy has on his desk, or he had on his desk, some legislation for expungement, which Reverend Sharpton has supported quite a bit. See, because once you deal with the expungement for most crimes, what you do is you take that blot away. See, we're in a society that's based on Judeo-Christian beliefs, and the Judeo-Christian belief believes in the act of redemption. However, we've become a society that doesn't believe that. So we have to return back to the roots, the basic roots of providing redemption. When a man does his time, he does his bid, that bid is over. Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." If you did it in the past, it's over with. Your slate is clean. You start over again. The next issue is to enfranchise a man. See, when a man doesn't have the capacity to participate at the ballot box, when his vote is suppressed, he becomes less than human. He doesn't participate in this society, and people do not have to pay attention to him. We have a whole group of people who are in prisons today who are represented by men and women who don't give a care about them because they live in other districts, but they're counted as the population in terms of appropriations, in terms of money, for some southern rural district when they come from an urban district. And this is happening all over the country. The state of Florida, the voters voted for prisoners to have the right to vote as soon as their time in prison is over. Now, what's happening and what I'm seeing over the news is that the current occupant of the governor's mansion is trying to fight that. But the people themselves of the sovereign state of Florida has come out for the enfranchisement of justice-involved persons. They don't call them ex-felons anymore. They say justice-involved persons. See, we have to remember that in slavery, our people were treated as objects.
Mm-hmm.
And when the 13th Amendment came and the Emancipation Proclamation and all of that and the official slavery was over, the white man still had in his notion the fact that the folks who were black slaves, former black slaves, were still objects. They
right.
were once chattel slavery. So in his mind, and still today, that's why we have this white nationalism, part of it.
Yes.
And then we have people coming up from different quarters saying, like to the squad, go back. But how can you tell Ayanna Pressley to go back when her forebears didn't take a train or plane or anywhere or any kinds of means of transportation to come here in the first place? You're telling people to go back who were originally brought here on a slave ship.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what happens, we have to change the rhetoric at top as well as change it on the bottom in terms of where folks are living and how they're surviving. We have to teach these men when they come out of prison how to survive, how to run a household, how to take care of a house, how to pay the bills. They don't know. And so those are some of the things that we have to, that's incumbent upon our leadership today. The other thing we have to do is we have to get leadership, because without a leader, you're going to fall. The good book says, slay the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. And right now we're a ship without a sail, without a rudder, without any kind of leadership, and we have to bring it back. You know, Dr. King passed, and when Dr. King passed, there was nobody to fill that vacuum. We may not have a national leader that like Dr. King or Malcolm X, but we have to fill it each day with people that are around us, and our young people have to start. And one of the problems in terms of black America and black males is who do they go to in order to get some kind of guidance? And most of the time, these young guys, they go back to folks who are in the same condition that they are. And when you do that, you're going to end up with a terrible result. So the two issues that I think we have to deal with in terms of the next legislature or the next or when we move nationally, because this country is on the brink of change.
It has to be.
But we have to deal with expungement and we have to deal with enfranchisement as two of the cornerstones of how we're going to take people who are reentering and integrate them in a system, because you can't integrate them in a system and have them still be prisoners. Abraham Lincoln, or even the scripture says, a house divided against itself can't stand. Either you're a slave or you're free.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent point, Edward, and I must agree with you because, you know, and I think sometimes we forget those very valid points that you made, is that most of these individuals, men and women, have not learned how to take care of themselves. They, you know, because they grew up in the penal system, and so they don't know about life skills, you know, like how to get along, how to create a family unit, how to buy groceries, how to budget money, how to, you know, to take care of all of that that's involved in day-to-day living. And I know for myself, and I'm only going to speak for myself, is that I don't give a lot of attention to that, you know, when I'm talking to someone. I'm assuming in my mind that they know, you know, all of this that's happening, you know, like, but I forget. They weren't exposed. They've not been out. They, you know, they may know how to work a cell phone, you know, and so sometimes we lose contact or we lose our sensibilities around the situation, rather, you know, that, well, if they know how to use a cell phone, then they know how to do all of this other things too, but they don't. You know, those are, I understand, are in the jails and so are in the prisons, and so they can learn that in there. But as far as everyday life skills, that's just something that I would love for the audience just to keep in mind, is that most of these individuals are being raised or growing up in a system that does not have a normal lifestyle. So just want to bring
if
that
I
up.
I'm sorry, if I may, Reverend Sandy, can I just jump in real quickly? I
sure,
hear what
sure.
you're saying about the kids or the people in the system not knowing how to do the basic things, run a household, have create a family, pay bills, and so much. That's a part of what rehabilitation should be. Now, in all reality, these things should be taught before they even enter into the system. That is why I said at the last show, if I believe that family is the foundation. If we have a strong family unit, then a lot of the issues we go through, we're going through in the system, we would not be facing. I agree that our environment and our culture has a big hand in how we live and how some of our children and sisters and brothers enter into the system. But I also strongly believe that it starts with that family. The moment that child is birthed into the world, what happens to that child? Are they nurtured by a two-parent family? Are they nurtured by a single mother that has to leave them in the care of somebody else while she tries to make a way for them? Are they left in the care of themselves, which most of them are? They're latchkey mm-hmm. kids because the mother has to work. The father's in jail. The mother may be in jail, but so the kid is left there alone. And if they're not incarcerated, then they're out struggling trying to make ends meet. So, again, the kid is left alone. There's no foundation. There's no grandmother. There's no aunt, no uncle, no cousin that's older that has been taught to be help take responsibility for this young child. So they go to school, and they go in hungry. They leave from a situation that's not the best. They go in hungry. Now they're being taught something they have no idea what's being taught. They become problems in school. They're kicked out of school because of the way the system is set up. I can't deal with them at home. They can't deal with them in school. So what are we going to do? We're going to put them out there on the street. Well, somebody has to take responsibility. And that's
yes,
where
ma'am.
We come in. We have to find a way to reach these babies before they even get involved into the system. We have to find a way to start teaching these babies at an early age how to take care of themselves. I'll speak for myself. I started teaching my kids how to cook, how to iron, how to wash, how to do everything they needed to do at the age of 8 or 9 years old. My reason for doing it was, what if I died today? Who's going to take care of them? Sure, we say we love them, and I'll look after them, but that's only until the insurance money is gone. And you may have somebody that love them a little bit more and be willing to take care of them, but if they don't want to cook for them, then they're hungry. So we have to start teaching them these things at home. We can't wait for them to go to jail and then expect the system, the penal system, to teach them how to pay a bill. We can't wait till they're in jail and then expect the penal system to teach them how to pay rent, how to do home, how to do the basic things. I won't even get into the big things, but the basic things. And we have to start teaching them about working early, earning their money. I had a conversation, and I won't be long, but I had a conversation with a group of people about these young boys on the corner selling water. And someone made the comment, well, I wish they wouldn't get out there. They're going to get hurt, and they own every corner. And my thought to them, which would you rather have them do out here selling water for a dollar breaking into your house?
Yes, ma'am.
They're out here
yes,
earning
ma'am.
An honest dollar.
Yeah.
So we can't have it both ways. But we as the adults, we as the people that have been there, we know what it's like. We have got to stop letting these babies be raised by themselves and become that
yeah.
grandmother. Teach that
yeah.
young man how to be a father. Mentor
mm-hmm.
that young man. Teach that young lady how to be a young lady. How to cover herself, how to present herself as a decent young woman. How to
mm-hmm.
be ready for a marriage and not for lust. I told the guys today when I was talking to them, you know, you guys get married for lust. You don't get married for marriage, for love. It's not, you don't know how to deal because somebody mentioned earlier, they don't have the coping skills.
Right.
And that's what we have to teach them. We have babied them so much. They can't play on a concrete playground. They have to play on rubber chips. They can't fall and skin their knees or their arms because somebody's going to be looked at for child neglect or abuse. We have made them so easy prepared to go into the jail system, and we don't even realize it. So we have to take responsibility. We can't put it on the system and let them do it. It starts with the family. It starts with us and the community. Take that village to raise that baby. Don't be afraid to speak to that young man out there cussing with his pants hanging down.
Yep.
Tell that young lady to cover herself. We have got to, because if we don't start doing it, it's going to get worse. And if we go into a recession, which I hear we're heading into, oh, you can guarantee the system's going to be even more full. And they'll build jails, but they won't build schoolhouse for you.
Yeah, they got
I agree with
that. They already know. Yeah, go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, I agree with everything because y'all are on point so much. And like me, the last 23 years of my incarceration before Obama had released me, I was an old law crack cocaine defendant. So Obama promised, he released us. A bunch of us are still in there. But me teaching workforce development to the felons that were in there, including myself, and even out here in society, teaching workforce development, communication skills, and the like to ex-felons, at-risk youth, everything you guys are saying is all the way on point and is needed. Like, for example, the ex-felon, if there could be a way where that conviction could not be used against us, we would have a fighting chance out here in the employment field. So what we did, we created something called the Ex-Felon Privacy Workforce Act, where for employment purposes and looking for housing, that prior conviction should be barred, should be sealed, because if you have 160 million people today in the workforce, half of that number, 80 million people, half of the workforce has done something in their lives that if they had gotten caught, they would have been labeled an ex-felon too. But when we go to try and get a job with the same people that have done the same thing, whether it was sold drugs, a burglary, or even a robbery, the same people don't feel comfortable around an ex-felon because he was caught and labeled, but they were never caught and labeled. But now it's even worse where you have the 80 million people that did the same thing that but were never caught or were protected by law because they had a judge in the family or whatever. It's even worse to be working around someone who you don't know what their mindset was at one time in the past. You know what I'm saying? So the status of an ex-felon, unless it's murder or child molestation, the status of an ex-felon should be something that's private, like your medical records, because it is being used so much to deny employment to people who are trying to do the right thing and actually have great skills to do that job. But for some reason, people who have done the same thing, they said, no, we don't really deal with ex-felons like that. They shunned them, the same person that did the same thing that they had done before, but they were never caught. So that's the unfairness in it. But that would solve an entire big problem all over the world with people going back to prison, getting back in the drug game, getting back into doing vandalism type acts because they cannot get a job because of that ex-felon stigma that's on them by some of the same people that have done the same, committed the same conduct. So that's one thing. And like you guys made a great point with skills. The children that are growing up, a lot of them, like they're growing up being raised by children, which are their parents, and they're lacking like communication skills on how to respect another person's space. That's when you see them getting loud on trains and all that stuff. Skills on how to be sociable. They don't want to talk, or they'll talk rudely to people. But it's not really the child's fault yet, because everyone in my classes that I've taught over the last 20-something years, when they get in that class and they first learn what the word being sociable means, when they first learn about how to dress for success, when they first learn about how to conduct an interview, or when they first learn about how to listen without speaking and then speak back and all that, they eat that stuff up because they were never taught it at a young age, and that's what got them to where they are today. They never had the basic common sense skills that we all are taught in home with parents that have known the same type of skills. But a lot of kids today, their parents didn't even know, were never taught. So it passes on to the child, and now the child is even more ignorant than the parent was. You know, I have a cousin in Jersey. She grew up, she's handicapped, so people picked with her, so she never even wanted to go to school, and her mother didn't make her go to school. So now she has four young men, 16, 17, 18, today, and she doesn't want any help raising them. She's teaching them the only thing she knows is fighting and ignorance. Now today, if you hear of crimes that are done in Newark, New Jersey, where they took the postal truck and were doing donuts in the street with it, where they carjacked someone at the mall, those were her kids. So it came from the parent not even knowing, but the kids are just straight ignorant. And no one seems to know why, but it's because the mother was ignorant herself. She didn't want any help from anyone in our family, and that's what she bred. So I'm counseling like two of her children now on my programs and everything, workforce development, reentry, and we're giving them the basic skills. And when they learn the basic skills about what is a resume, or you're out there stealing cars, that's a skill. You need to turn that skill into something positive for the workforce. So they never been taught that. So that's another point that you guys already made. And one last point is that when the kids are ignorant and they don't know any better, the house is dysfunctional and everything, nothing's going right in the house. They're broke. Their dad is in jail. Their mother's on welfare and getting a check, and she's too ignorant to really not. And I'm saying ignorant in a bad way, because ignorance means just a lack of knowledge of whatever the subject matter is. We're all ignorant to something, you know. So it's just a lack of knowledge of something. But the mother being ignorant, she raised kids to be ignorant. So now they go to school and they don't have any home training, and people are picking at them in school because they're dirty and dusty and all that. That makes them buck in school. It's embarrassing for them in school. So they leave school, they get kicked out of school, they're getting kicked out of the house, they're stuck to the streets, all because they don't know. Unfortunately, is that when a lot of them go to prison, even myself, I was a good kid at home, but I made the bad choice to get involved in drugs. But even once I did go to prison, I educated myself more and more and more. And the more I educated myself on the basic things that I should have learned when I was younger, the more it all became clear to me, the more I had a hunger and thirst for it. Just like every student I've had, whether it was GED classes, resume classes, classes on communication skills, every person that came in there on that ignorant level, when they started learning how easy it was just to learn how to respect another person's space, how to communicate, how the verbal and nonverbals dealing with communication, they were eating it up. And every day they would see me, when is the next class? When is the next class? They never even had a chance to do it. So now those are the ones that are out in the streets now doing things without even the skill of consequence for their actions. If they even just had that skill, the consequence of this action is going to bring this, they would not do it. You see how many of these kids are crying?
Hey, G.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. You see how many of these kids are crying like crazy when they get caught after a carjacking, telling on everyone? They never had the skill to even know what the consequence of their actions are. So those are the programs that I do today, and not one time has any child, no matter who they were or adult, and because we have some adults that still never even got a chance to get these skills. They come to the classes all the time too, and when they get them, they're like, man, if I would have known this, I would have never came back to prison. If I had known this, I would have never did this. But they want it and they need it. They just never had that opportunity to get it. And the parents could be to blame, but even the parents that were not taught that same thing themselves, their parents could be to blame. You know, it's just amazing that you guys are hitting on the exact points of what I've seen by experience and doing the classes and by experience in my own life when I was learning all this stuff. You know, so you guys are all the way on point.
Can I just jump in right quick, and I'm going to hush and listen from this point on.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to say you're absolutely right. One of the things when I talk with the men, I tell them one of the things that I like to do is I like to be open and honest. And I told them today, you guys are getting all upset and discombobulated because you're saying somebody's disrespecting you. But the sad point of it is you don't even know what the word respect means. So what I want you to do is I want you to look up what respect means. And we're going to talk about it because I do some of the same type classes. I provide healthy family relationships, family traditions, building strong families. And I talk about coping skills and anger management. I talk about the babies, how they need to be fathers, how the babies imitate them. They're sponges. They soak up everything. And just like when they're in the street, you squeeze them and everything they've seen and heard at home is put out on them in the street. So they're sponges, they're imitators, and we have to be careful what we present before them because they're going to do exactly that. And I just want to say you are exactly right because I tell them the same thing. I go through this mm-hmm. piece by piece with them every week, either in AA, NA, or in one of the family classes that we do, trying to get them to see and understand. And you're right. When they find out, somebody will tell them because they really do want to know. But nobody, he's right, nobody has ever taken the time to pour into them that which they need. I tell them all the time that I'm very transparent about my life. And when I was in the world and in the street, what my parents taught me, what my grandmother taught me, kept me from going across that line that was of no return. It's those things, when I got out so far, I could hear their voice and I could hear that warning, and it would pull me back. Now, this is years after they died and passed on, went on, but I still hear it to this very day. And if we pour it into the babies, into them when they're young enough to absorb it, they may stray, they may go out, but you could almost guarantee that they're not going to get to that point of no return. And if they do end up in the system, you're going to hear the voices, and it's going to pull them back and help turn them around because they really are screaming when they're doing the things they want to do. They're doing out there selling drugs, robbing folks, carjacking, talking all kinds of crazy ways. When they're doing these things, they're screaming, "Do anybody hear me? Do somebody? Can you see me?"
Yes.
They're looking for somebody. And we turn a blind eye and walk as if we don't see them. We have to open our eyes. Okay.
Ms. Rogers.
Go ahead. I'm done.
I think that a couple of things is happening that we're overlooking. And one thing that we overlook is that living today is much different, much more difficult than it was 50 years ago. When I walk through the streets, I see a couple of things. Number one, I see, and I call them the four A's. Number one, assimilation of other people. In terms of black males, the whole issue of androgyny, the whole issue of alienation, and the whole issue of automation. See, black folks basically, the 2016 median income of the white family is $171,000. The income of a black family, the median income, was $17,000. So we're getting by with 10% of what the majority culture, or the so-called majority culture, is living on. The issue of assimilation, other groups are coming into this society and into this world, and they're taking their certain niche. I go to the convenience store, and they're ran by one group of people. They employ their folks and their families. The androgyny, when it comes to the black male, jobs that was once male-oriented is no longer male. When I get up on Monday morning and I see the garbage being collected, a woman is in the truck, and they're picking up the garbage mechanically. There's nothing wrong with the woman in the truck. I'm just using this as a point to show what has happened in terms of jobs that was once male-oriented. Martin Luther King, before he died, he went to Memphis to intervene with the sanitation workers there. Alienation is another issue because what happens is that as society has gone on and has progressed, the things that are at our disposal, the amount of knowledge that we need and the kinds of knowledge that we need has changed over the years. No longer, it's hard to find anybody who write in cursive any longer. We have a world where people pick up an app or they pick up a cell phone when they want to get certain kinds of information. You go to the library, I'm going to the library to do some research, nothing is in paper anymore. When I did my doctorate, I went to the library at Boston U, and I went into Mueller Library and I picked up a volume. Now I have to access a computer. The other issue is automation in cyberspace and artificial intelligence. And our people are out. So what happens is that the demons that we face are not only demons in terms of the injustice because of racism and because of being pushed out of the society in terms of the whole idea of almost like people being prejudiced against us, but also because the times are beginning to move so fast and so furious. I see guys go into, I went to pay the telephone bill, and a guy came out of his pocket with stacks of money, with what they call in prison, we call it a stack, $1,000. They pulled out a stack. People don't walk around with money any longer. They have a debit and a credit card. So what happens is that life is changing, and we're not catching up to the changes. We don't understand the whole issue of having good credit, how we get good credit, because a lot of times to get a job is an issue of credit rating. It's not an issue just so much of what schools you went to. Life has changed, and we haven't changed because we've had no one to teach us or to teach these young people the changes that the world is going through. It is changing daily. And that's one of the things I want to put in, that it's not only the systemic racism, but it's also the fact that the society is being transformed right in front of our eyes, and we're not able to grasp the changes that's taking place and move with it.
I so agree with you, Edward. And in addition to that, you know, there are so many distractions that are available now. And I'm just amazed at the number of young people, well, older people too, that walk around with their cell phones and they never look up. They never, you know, greet someone coming down the street eye to eye. They can walk across the street in oncoming traffic, but as long as they got their phone and they're, you know, texting or whatever they're doing on that phone, they're okay. And then some of these maddening TV programs that they have on, you know, it's dumbing people down and just serving as a huge distraction in addition to the food that's causing brain fog. And so you're absolutely right. You know, 50 years ago, we didn't have to concern ourselves with all of that. You know, mom usually made dinner for us, and we sat down at the table, and everybody ate together. The neighborhood came over and ate for those whose moms, you know, couldn't afford or weren't at home or whatever. So it was a village, and we all took care of each other. But that is, it's slowly leaving the communities. And that was one of the reasons, one of my main reasons I wanted to fight back, because I want to hear from you, what is it that we can do? Perhaps there's someone that's listening that has the desire to create, like Reverend Charlie was talking about, creating a home, you know, multi-tenant home where people can come and, you know, learn some of the skills and, you know, get the history lessons from you, Edward, and, you know, so that everybody's putting in to the different individuals that are needing the type of services that you guys provide. So I'm loving.
Well, what I'm personally doing, I'm working on a program called Remove This Reproach, Incorporated, and hopefully by the end of the year we would have started it. We want to deal with a couple of areas. One area is to provide some videos and some written material for people who are already in prison before they leave prison. Because if you present a man with ideas, he has to act on it. He can either reject it or at least it's presented to him. The other thing we want to do is to deal with the community in terms of offering or dealing with the housing of these guys who get out of prison. And I know what's required, because when I got out of prison, I went to a recovery, a reentry house. And I know what it is to get out of prison with $25 in your pocket, and then the next thing you know is I have to make a living, because the system say you're free, but you're not free.
Exactly.
And you go and look for a job, and folks slam the door in your face, and you know darn well that you're qualified.
Mm-hmm.
But only person that could really deal with people who are coming out of prison is people who could empathize with them because they have come out of prison, because you know what the what to expect. You've seen other guys who've come out. I've seen young guys come out of prison and go straight back on drugs, and they get on worse drugs because what's happened, even in the drug game isn't what it was 20 and 30 years ago. A guy just can't get out of prison and take his old trap that he used to have because there's other folks in that trap, in that locale. And the other thing is that the nature of the drug game has changed. You know, some of these white boys is making opioids and methamphetamines and stuff right inside of their property in some distant areas, and then other groups are selling. So it's
right,
not a
thing right.
where the retailing of drugs is something that's done with black folks.
Mm-hmm.
But before I stop there, I like to put this point in. During the 1960s and up to the mid-70s, the black man was put into the war in Vietnam. He was a soldier. He was a fighter. And he was a combatant. He was in the war in Vietnam, and he was dying and coming home with a flag-draped coffin. As soon as that war was over, the government issued another war, and they called it the War on Drugs. So when he got out of Vietnam, and he may have involved himself in drugs in Vietnam, you may have given a Purple Heart or something. In a couple of months, what you did is you started incarcerating him once he did the same thing on the street as a civilian.
Right.
That's a heavy thought.
Yeah.
See, when we became, in this society, as long as they could use you, they won't do certain things to you. As soon as they feel that you're invaluable, that you're, as soon as you lose your value to them, they'll do anything to you. And that's what they've done to the black man. But the problem is that you can't dig a hole for somebody without getting mud on your own feet.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing is coming back and hurting them big time. They're being found out, and some of those guys who have literally torn our people apart, the sheets are being torn back, and all the dirt that they've done is coming to the forefront. And that's why when I see Maxine Waters on TV, on Ayanna Pressley and AOC, I get happy. Because I said those women are going to lead this country to justice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope they do.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that, Edward. You know, let me just say this right quick, Reverend Charlie. So,
yeah, go ahead.
My view before Vietnam and Desert Storm and all of like that is that, and I get the point that a lot of these laws are aimed at people of color, but it affects all of us because, you know, these young people, they are in college or, I'm sorry, in high school. And, you know, they want to get into the military because they think that's the honorable thing to do. But what happens is you're raised to respect and honor other people and not to cause any harm to other people, you know, or you expel from school or, you know, you get on punishment at home or something to that effect. But then you go into the military and you're expected. You're forced to kill people that you don't even know, be it a woman, a child, it doesn't, old person, young person, it doesn't even matter. So I understand why people take drugs or use drugs, why they're in the military, but the same thing that was said with Reverend Charlie was talking about all of you guys. I'm not sure exactly which one of you said it, but the rehabilitation is everything that we do, and we're just like you just said, we don't have that system in place. Like, okay, now you need, we indoctrinated you and we forced you to kill people going into the wars. Now we got to do something to help you to come back to a peace-filled society. The same thing, well, yeah, we kind of made some laws up to make sure that we had enough of a free workforce in the prison system. So now that, you know, somebody didn't look at it and called us on our stuff, now we got to let you go. The same thing, there's no rehabilitation program in place. So it's not just one area. And that's why I'm saying it's something that we've got to do. And I appreciate you with your training program that you're going into the prisons with, Remove This Reproach. And Reverend Charlie, I'm proud of what you're doing by reaching into the community and looking for places where these individuals can stay. And Glenn, for you doing the training that you're doing, both in and outside, this is the kind of work that we need. This is the dedication from people that we need. So I just want to say that. And so you guys go right ahead. Reverend Charlie.
Well, thank you. I won't be but a minute because I see the time has caught up with us. I just wanted to say one of the things that I think that we can do is to forge more collaboration. A lot of us are doing the same type work in the same in different areas. And I think if we can come together and brainstorm, we can come up with a program or a format that will better suit each of our causes. One of the issues that I have is all of us do different things to try and help one another, help those that we're involved with. But it's a close-knit group. We don't want to share. We don't want to provide resources. We don't want to volunteer with one another. We don't want to help one another. We don't want to mentor one another. And I think that's what we have to do is start mentoring one another. But I think we have to stay with the basics. The basics is so needed. As Glenn, I believe it was, the same. One of the things that we're starting is we're creating a parenting class that we're hoping to start. We were hoping to start in October, but we're a little bit behind in getting the program finished out. But that's one of the things that I want to start doing. And I want to start be able to go into the schools and start presenting some classes, basic etiquette classes, job preparation classes. How do you do the resumes? Dressing for success. We already do a session of dressing for success. We do job resumes. But I want to take these things into the schools because they used to be taught in school. How do you fill out an application? But they don't teach them in the schools anymore. So I want my organization to be able to go into the schools once we get these programs really fine-tuned, go into the schools and start teaching them at an early age so they'll have to bring back home economics. Teach them how to cook and stay out of Burger King, McDonald's.
Yes,
so the
ma'am.
Babies will be healthy.
Yep.
So that's just some of the things I think we need to do. And also one other thing is to teach us how to value ourselves. We are not what people say we are, and we have to learn how to turn our ear when we hear people saying that we're this, or they're putting their labels on us. They're defining us by what they think we should be, and we have to learn how to reject what they say and grow up, stand up, and be who we know we are. We are strong people. We are survivors no matter what. You won't get rid of us no matter how hard you try. But if we're not careful, we'll get rid of ourselves. So we have to create our own communities again. It's not segregation. It's just we know us better than anybody else. So let's do what we need to do to become a better, a stronger, more productive us. Thank you.
So give us your contact information. If somebody wants to work with you, how can they contact you?
I'm on social media as 101. Personal development. I am. My website is 101personaldevelopment.com. Trying to think. My phone number is 734-845-9675. Email is 101personaldevelopment@gmail.com.
And that's the number one?
That is the number
or
one. Thank you so much. That is the number one. In all instances, number one, own what? The word own, O-N, number one, personaldevelopmentspelledout.com. Thank you so much for that.
Sure.
Sandy.
Yes.
Sandy. Yeah, can you write? Because I'm driving right now. I'm Glenn. Can you write hers down for me?
I got the car
started back up, so that was a blessing. So.
Oh, good.
A blessing.
Yeah, so, I mean, Glenn is so dedicated to, you know, being able to share that his car was actually broken down, and so he has said he wouldn't be with us for the whole evening. And so I'm so thankful that, you know, prayers are answered and you're back up and running. Thank you, Glenn.
Yes, I want to get everyone's information together, because definitely we have to link up. But we have a lot of stuff to offer, and people need this stuff. You know, a location actually in Decatur, where I'm working with a guy named Maurice at Results Central. So he has a standing location where we're gonna do programs from that location. So if anyone does not have a permanent location, let's link up and actually do classes and programs from his location, because he kind of like gave me the okay as far as like classes and stuff being ran from there. You know, so we definitely have to link up and get this information out. He does a lot of mentoring and stuff like that for the kids too. So we have to put our heads together and everyone get each other's information, and let's do it.
Absolutely.
So how can people get in contact with you, Glenn?
Okay, Glenn, I'm on Facebook. We have a weekly show called Reformed Ex-Felon Interviews. It comes on every Wednesday night. And we have YouTube with the same name, Reformed Ex-Felon Interviews. The website is communityworkforcereentry.com. And on that website, there's a list of all the classes that we deal with. And right now, I have about 20, 25 different people, teachers, educators, motivators, and leaders that help me with administering the classes. And I like to join with you guys, too, so we can all make it even bigger. And we can do our own group and start that. A fresh group with on some other stuff that we're doing now. So communityworkforcereentry.com, and reentry is with two E's. Anything you guys see on there, anything that you guys already have, let's link up and make it happen. The world needs us. We have actually the recipe to get our youth in order. So we just have to put it out there. We already know what it is. We've studied it and we've experienced it, and we see what they're lacking. We see where they went wrong. We see how they chose negative role models that has kind of like distorted their belief systems to be the way the way it is today. And even some adults, they had the negative role models from back then that like I said today. The adults with the negative role models today, those role models from back then had them saying today at 50 years old, I've never had a job, I'm a hustler. So when they get knowledge that we have to give them, they'll never say that again. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
because they
right.
need employment, and but their belief system is just messed. I've never worked for the white man. I'm a hustler. I get money, and they're talking about going out there selling drugs, and they still think it's okay at that age. So it's up to us to get them to get that changed mindset, and it'll be easy once we get them in our quarters, in our grips. We can pour it on them, and they're gonna accept it. You know, so let's do it. I'm ready. Like I said, my phone number is 470, and that'd be an easier way to really get all the other links that I just said. Give me a call at 470-392-9475, and I can get all the links, and we can connect. And we can connect with Sandy, and she's doing great things, bringing people like us together. So I'm just here and I'm ready, man. I never run out of energy when it comes to community workforce development and reentry. And what I've also done, and I'm almost done. What I've also done, I'm an independent producer and director and screenwriter. So one of my classes is screenwriting. I found a way to connect. We're talented people, so when we connect film, entertainment, and talent with community workforce development and reentry, that's when we really get the other ones in that would not really deal with just basic community workforce and reentry. We get them with their talent and bring them and show them how they can make money from their talent. And that's how we get their attention. So I'm ready, 2019. Let's do it, y'all. We have what it takes.
Thank you very much, Glenn. And Edward.
Okay, my organization, ma'am, my organization is called Remove This Reproach, and our number, our email address is remove.this.reproach, and this is a lowercase t, removethisreproach@gmail.com.
Okay.
And Ms. Rogers, I will be getting back with you to get more information in terms of the folks that we've been talking to. I'm interested in that whole idea of the media, and I'll be talking with the gentleman about that in the future, in the near future.
So have you got your website up, Edward, yet?
We didn't put that up. We just got the email.
Okay.
We're trying to do the nonprofit, and I've gone through that and put us through on that. But we're on our way.
Yes.
We're on our way.
Is that a question?
We're trying to deal with the housing issue now, but we're at least where this is something that has happened. Part of it is a result of being on your show the last time, because the thing is, faith without works is dead. We have to do something that
right.
is active. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
So tell them about your book, too. Tell them about your book.
Well, me? Well right now I'm
yeah.
writing something. I'm writing something new. And what I'm doing is I'm doing a novel, but I'm using the second chapter as something like a review of the literature. And I'm beginning to look in this literature, historical literature, on the slave breeding concept.
Mm.
This
mm-hmm.
is some stuff that I did not know. It's the whole idea that the American black male from, or the African American people, our people, were objects from the very beginning. The Constitution
mm-hmm.
said we were 3/5 of a man. And they treated us as objects, even in terms of breeding. And what they did in antebellum America was take the northern states, or the northern southern states, like Kentucky, Maryland, Missouri, Delaware. When the land was wasted, what they did was to use those as slave breeding states, because the abolition of the slave trade, which W.E.B. Du Bois talked about it. In fact, W.E.B. Du Bois wrote the first historical series, number one, the suppression of the African slave trade to the United States of America. Once that slave trade ended in 1808, they had to replenish the slave population. So what they did is they enacted this whole idea of slave breeding.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once slavery was over, then what the white man said was the values that he inculcated, because slaves didn't marry. Slaves didn't do any of that, because they were seen to be almost chattel, almost as though they were cows or sheep or anything else like that. So what happened was that after that happened, the white man had a certain thing in his mind in terms of the way black folk, in terms of his morality. And then what happened is that we have a situation that has brought itself even down to today, because the black man was never considered the kind of person who will go into a home and run his home, because he was never given that because of slavery. And later, because of mass incarceration, and because of Jim Crow, and because of lynching.
Mm-hmm.
So we have had a history of being systematically abused in this country. So what we've done a lot of times is that they blame the victim. And I see a lot of that. And so that's what I'm beginning to write in my book. And I'm writing about the whole issue of male sexuality and income inequality. because when they get you on a certain plateau where you can't produce, then you can't produce in any other area of your life.
That's
to include your role as a in the family and also as in your sexual actions. And so that's what I'm writing on now. You know, and that's quite an evolution.
Yeah. That's great. That is absolutely great. Thank you. So you'll have to come back on when you write your book and let us know. I'm going to repeat these contact information, and then we've got about 3 minutes left. So if you guys have like a real quick, like 60-second thing, let me know. So Edward Palmore, Palmore, his organization is Remove This Reproach, and his email is remove.this.reproach@gmail.com. Reverend Charlie, and I know there's another, but I'm going to say Reverend Charlie Wilson. I know you had another name in there. I missed it on this printout here. And her organization is oneononepersonaldevelopment.com, oneononepersonaldevelopment@gmail. And Glenn has space to do classes. He wants you to reach out to him for that. And his is Reformed Ex-Felons Interview on Facebook. And the website is communityworkforcereentry.com. And he provided his number, 470-392-9475. So anyone have just a real short, brief something? We're down to like 90 seconds. If not, I'm good.
Yeah, I just wanted to get I can get their phone numbers from you. If you guys can give Sandy your phone numbers, I wanted to add them into my own. Okay, if it's okay for her to give them to me, you know, that way, yeah, we can definitely
right.
I love what everyone's doing, so that's just a blessing. You know, the world needs what we have, so.
Indeed.
And I just thank you for allowing us to be on the show. Thank you, guys. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, and that's Edward Palmore.
Palmore.
Reverend Charlie Holiday Wilson, I found it. And Glenn Williams. Thank you, guys. I'm going to play a song to close us out. And catch me next week, everybody. All right.
Okay.
Love you.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Understand revolution is no solution. I can pick somebody up. Why are you doing this thing? How come you're playing music for people? Getting up early in the morning just to catch a plane, a bus, and a train. Going insane, fanning the flame. So then why? Is it for love? Is it for self-expression? Is it to combat depression? Is it to make people happy? I mean, I love it. I can hear it. I can listen to what somebody smiles at. But when I'm happy, when I'm sad, when I'm sad.
All right, good night, you guys. Love you all.
Stand the pain, and I feel I'm going insane till I get back home again. When I think